Welcome back to the November Academic Life Emergency Medicine Book Club. We are very excited to discuss this month's Humble Inquiry, right here, by Edgar Sheehan. And today we have Jordana Haber and Eve Curdy joining us. And so I'm going to be moderating today. My name is Nikita Joshi. I'm going to just start off by asking questions, and we'll just start this discussion. So the first question is for Eve. How might you apply the concept of humble inquiry to patient care and to medical education? And if you could just describe a little bit about what humble inquiry actually is.
It's a communication strategy that's based on relationships between people who are working together. And the idea is to develop these relationships through asking questions. And you're not supposed to ask questions to test each other, but you're supposed to ask questions because you recognize and you understand that two people or a group of people in an organization actually have something to offer to each other. So in patient care, it would mean asking patients questions, not necessarily because, you know, you're just looking for a specific piece of information, but because you actually value what the patient is bringing to the encounter and think that they hold just as important piece into giving them the best care as you do. And so it would be engaging patients and recognizing that they have something to offer. And then in medical education, it would mean engaging learners by asking questions because you think that they have something to offer as well.
How do you, as a medical student, apply it, though? Like, what do you do specifically?
So as a medical student with patients, often I'll ask the patient, often because I think they usually have a really good idea of what do you think is going on and you know, what brought you here today, and listen to those answers. So not do it. You often hear, at least in Canada, we talk a fair bit about this model Fife, which is feelings, ideas, function, and expectation. And you'll sometimes hear medical students throwing it around saying, you know, oh, I Fife the patient. But this isn't about doing something to get through a checklist because you're supposed to make patients feel better about themselves and feel better about the interaction. It's actually responding to patients and listening to what they have to say because you think that what they have to offer is valuable, not just because you're supposed to. So with patients, I spend a lot of time with them thinking and listening to about what they think is going on and what their concerns are. And I think that that creates a nice foundation for not only the doctor-patient relationship, but also usually they have very valuable insight.
What do you, as an attending, how do you kind of apply this concept? And now that you're an attending and you've had experience being a medical student resident, how has it been different in any of these stages for you?
You know, I just think over the years going through the medical school to resident to attending, I started to really value exactly what Eve was saying, that a patient really has so much to offer, that their story is probably the most important thing we do. And we focus in our training a lot on diagnostic test studies, trying to fit a patient into a certain pathway of care. And really, the most important thing, what we've been learning, is that the most important thing really is probably this history and what a patient thinks is going on or what why they're here today. And I often teach my medical students and residents when we go to the bedside, really that chief complaint and that history of the present illness is what brought the patient here today. What's their concern? What question they had? Was it that someone else told them they had to come? Were they afraid of a story that they heard from someone else? So that's sometimes you can't really help your patient or answer the questions of why they're here unless you know why they're here, what their concerns are. And I think that's really what humble inquiry is about. It's getting to that understanding, creating a relationship with your patient or with your learner, getting their opinion, making it a partnership.
What can you do when time is limited or there are barriers such as cultural barriers? In some societies, women are uncomfortable speaking to men, for example. Or what do you do in an emergency situation where you just don't have the time to really flesh out why someone is there? How do you kind of still keep true to this concept of humble inquiry?
Yeah, you know, I think that clearly becomes more challenging. I think we have these ideals to really build a relationship that is this partnership with our patients, and sometimes that can be more challenging, and we might not feel like we did that the best that we could, or we didn't get to that point that we wanted, but I think having that on your agenda, like that, I love that idea of the Fife. I've never heard of that before that Eve just shared. But really having that become part of your culture and your practice, that is the goal, is to reach that point of a good communication and have an informed patient where you are doing your best to have a partnership. So I know where we work, there's a lot of cultural barriers in Brooklyn is where I work, and it's very common that we won't speak the language of our patient. So we have patient representatives all the time around the hospital that we can easily reach out to who can help with translating. We have phones, so we do a lot of things at our hospital to make it easier for the physician. So it's not a time-consuming process, and we're all on the same page that we realize that importance, that's important for our patients. We try to connect with the primary care doctors as much as we can to get more information. So I think it's not just about the patient and the physician at the time, especially in the emergency room. It's about this being sort of a bigger issue that the hospital recognizes or society recognizes that the importance of this.
And Eve, when you've done your different rotations as a medical student, have you seen different ways of applying home inquiry, you know, the emergency department versus the surgical floors, the outpatient clinics? Have you seen differences?
I guess I've seen differences on services, but I think I've really seen differences more with specific physicians. So I've seen some physicians do it really well. They start off a patient interaction, and you know that the patient's at the heart of it. You know, they'll ask where they're from, they'll ask what brought them in, and make a patient feel at ease. And I've seen that on surgery floors, and I've seen that in the emergency department, and I've seen that in the family doctor's office. And then I've also seen it maybe done not so well in all of those places as well. So I'm not sure that it's totally service dependent. I think that in my limited experience, it can be done anywhere. You can recognize and appreciate that a patient is bringing the most important piece to the interaction, no matter where you are in the hospital.
I guess that takes us to the next question that we had for the discussion, which is, think about a situation in which you were the subordinate or had a lower status than another person, yet felt respected and acknowledged. Can you identify what the other person did to make you feel that way? And maybe we can kind of change this to an example that involves medical education.
So I'm laughing a bit because where I'm at in my training generally puts me as the subordinate at all times. And there's a few key things that I've identified in people that I'm working with who make me feel not only like I'm a part of the team and I have something to offer, but who also then inspire me through that to learn more and to contribute more. So one very tangible thing to do is to address people's subordinates by name. Also to appreciate that even though they might be at a lower status, they have maybe done something that you haven't been able to do. So for example, a great example is when we're on call overnight, and I've seen a patient and I've spent 3 or 4 hours with them. That's time that an attending hasn't necessarily spent with the patient. So I will come off a night of call and maybe have some harebrained ideas about what I think we should do. And my attending will say, you know what, you have spent more time with this patient than I have. What makes you think that? It's not testing me. It's because he actually recognizes that I've spent more time with the patient, and maybe just I'm not doing a good job of explaining why I want to do what I'm saying I want to do. So I think asking questions, not necessarily just to test people, but to try to understand where they're coming from as a learner, is really valuable, and I respond well to, at least.
Yeah, you know, I clearly remember a lot of the attendings and residents I worked with as a medical student. They were very influential in my goals moving forward, and I think I try to remember that now, being in a higher position, that I remember so clearly those conversations or little bits of wisdom I got from an attending or a resident, and making that time that I'm with a resident or a medical student now very valuable, and trying to know what their questions, know where they're moving, where they want to go in their career, and respecting them. So I think this is how you start to form your own habits. It really starts early on. So if you feel that you're being disrespected when you're at the lower level, you're going to project that onto your patients and probably project it onto your future learners when you're an attending. And also going back to some of the things Eve said, I couldn't agree more that usually the medical students get to spend more time at the bedside with the patient and get more of that history that we're missing. So I do the same things as an educator. I ask, what do you think is happening here? And I let the medical student know that their time that they spent with the patient is so valuable to me, that information they gathered is very important, and their opinions that they developed. And then often they need some guidance. Hopefully I can give them that from having seen more patients and telling them how I'm thinking, being a bit more explicit with my thought process and management plan. And that's really where humble inquiry, I love this concept, is so active in that conversation where we're trying to be a partnership and understand each other.
I wonder, though, sometimes, to play a little devil's advocate, and this is something that happens in simulation a lot, and the reason simulation comes to mind is because this concept of humble inquiry is so similar to the strategies employed in a good debriefing, which is open-ended questions, know that your learner comes with a certain level of knowledge, and when there is something that seems confusing, like they didn't order a fingerstick glucose on the obviously hypoglycemic patient, you know, maybe it wasn't a knowledge issue, but something else, and to try to get at that heart. But what happens when you don't have time to really get at the heart of the matter? Or if there's something so egregiously done, sometimes problems are so gross that they must be addressed full on, and that, at least that's how I feel about it.
I can see that. I think, you know, now we're talking about these concepts that are so ideal in a way. I see them as really ideal things that we're reaching for. Yet we clearly know we work, especially in the emergency room, in a very stressful environment where we're not always on our best behavior, probably because of the circumstance. But, you know, our job at the end of the day is patient care, and we have to make sure our patients are safe. So I would say if there's an issue, that always is the primary goal for our job. And then being aware that there is plenty of time to establish good relationships, to ask our learner, how are you doing today? How getting to know them a little bit. Where are you from? What are your outside interests? I think that really goes a long way. Like Eve had mentioned about even when she can tell when a doctor is interested in their patient, it's so clear. And it doesn't matter if they're in the emergency room or if they're on the surgical wards or in primary care settings. I think these days every field is pressured for time and with limited resources. But those doctors who really spend the time to care for their patients and are curious about their patients, it's really clear, and I don't think they're spending that much more time, and it's definitely not time wasted. And I would think that they have a more happiness in their work from establishing those relationships.
I'd agree. I think the relationship, especially with the learner, is interesting because I'd say my best teachers and the teachers who I feel like I have a good relationship with are the people who can tell me that I'm wrong and can do that very quickly, that I've developed some type of relationship with. And that becomes hard in our model of medical education, at least undergraduate medical education, where we're switching rotations every 5 or 6 weeks and staff is usually changing and residents are turning over so quickly that we actually lose the ability to form these valuable relationships. I was lucky enough to do an integrated clerkship where I spent 5 months in one community with kind of a group of doctors, but mainly two doctors. And we developed a relationship that allowed for very honest communication and allowed them to ask me questions. But I knew that it was based on the right things. Whereas I, as a learner, if I'm working on a surgical service with a surgeon for 1 week and I see him twice in the week and both times he asked me a question that I don't know the answer to and that I feel kind of dumb about it, I don't know what the intentions were. I always assume that they're good intentions, but I know for some learners it's that can be a bit more of a struggle when there's just no relationship and you're being put into some kind of high-stress situation.
I think also what you're referring to could also be construed as pimping. I think part of the problem with pimping is not just the rapid-fire asking of questions that may not be even relevant, but I wonder if sometimes learners get the sense that the attending came with 5 questions that they ask every single learner for the last 20 years, and they know that no one's ever going to do it, know the answer, but that's just what they say. So how can you as a learner feel like your education has been tailored towards you or that clinical situation if you're being asked seemingly random questions versus the attending who goes by some of these tips, which is do less talking, do more asking, and that would allow them to shape the learning towards that learner's need. And I think even if the questions were difficult or there was no answer to them, the learner probably would appreciate it more.
And they'd go home, and because the questions are relevant to whatever was being discussed, they'd go home and look into that. Like, these types of questions should inspire students to learn more, not learn less. And as soon as you don't have a relationship, and the learner shuts down, then they kind of want to learn less, not more.
I really liked that idea, and I became more aware after reading this book of my own habits of when am I telling and when am I asking, and I plan to be more mindful of that after reading this book, because I'm sure that I'm just as guilty of having moments that maybe better made if I was to do more asking than telling. And we all have habits of that probably in medical education. We know we're taught that lecturing is sort of this gold standard, and that doesn't always work. The amount that our students absorb from that is probably minimal. And how can we create more engaging learning environments? And probably this idea of doing less telling and more asking and creating true inquiry of curiosity and coming from a good place, like that humble place, probably will create better learning and also develop these good habits in our learners so they're more compassionate, I think.
So one of the strategies that I try to do in the emergency department where there's limited time is I try to come to my shifts with something that I want to teach about. Maybe I just read an article and I have some points that I got from the article that I want to teach. So if there's downtime for 5 minutes, even if it's not clinically relevant to any patient in the ER, but because there's downtime, I'll gather the residents around, the medical students, and just for 5-10 minutes review something, and then I'm done, so that the shift can go on, we can get busy, we can focus on patient care, but at least the residents knew that when there was downtime, instead of only checking my email, I actually made the effort to turn around and kind of create just a few minutes of a learning environment. I think that also goes a long way.
I like that. I think that's a good habit, and probably just to think about other ones that we can do that are like that. Like, what little things can we do, build into our practice and into our teaching practice, that show more interest in our learners?
And we've sort of already talked about the third question, but there's a second part to the third question that we didn't really get to as much. And is humble inquiry appropriate in all circumstances? Mm-hmm. Eve, as a learner, do you think humble inquiry is appropriate every time?
I'm not sure, you know, like asking questions is necessarily appropriate every time, but I think the relationships that humble inquiry builds are essential. So I can tell even when I'm working with somebody who's curt or who is pimping me, or if they're coming from the right place, and if they're coming from a place where they're really looking out for a patient and I know it's not the right time for teaching, then that's fine, and I can totally appreciate that as a learner. I think the idea that medical students and junior learners and everybody who's working to care for a patient has something to offer, I think that's appropriate all the time. It just is finding a way to convey that in a way that's, you know, safe for the patient and is at the right time. And I think you can develop that relationship. I do.
What you're referring to is the mindset. The positive mindset should always be the foundation of what we do.
It's an interesting question. One, is it appropriate in all circumstances? And I think this is another, I see this as like another tool for my toolbox of being more aware. I believe I practice this concept of mindful medicine, that you're always trying to become better at what we're doing, become a better educator, become a better clinician. And I think of this tool of humble inquiry now something I can use and be more aware of in my practice where it fits in. And that probably there's times where I could have used it and it would have helped me create a better relationship with the learner or with the patient. Sure, there's times where, like you said, Eve, that moment won't be a humble inquiry moment. It won't be a long conversation, but that message is probably conveyed a lot in our actions too. So even if we're directly caring for a patient, even an emergency procedure, there's still moments in our actions that probably reflect how we respect the people we're working with, the medical student, the nurses, the staff, the patient. Are we creating a team, like this humble inquiry talks about, that where everyone has input and can correct each other? So some of that is just about our nonverbal communication, I think, too.
Discussion today was about humble inquiry, but just wanted to give Eve and Jordana an opportunity to give one final pitch for why everybody should read this book. Starting with you, Eve.
So a few reasons. I think that it's great because it's short, so everybody can read the book. You can find enough time. And it's actually changed the way, not just that interactions have gone for me at work, but also I think it's a method for communicating with everybody in our lives. And it's actually, for me, made life a lot more interesting, because as soon as you engage and really want to try to figure out where people are coming from, it kind of opens up this whole new world.
You know, useful beyond just at work. I like it.
I was going to say something similar. I've been talking about this book since I read it and just applying it to my friendships, to my relationships that are important to me. And I think I'm really excited to be able to try some of these things at work too. So communication is so important in our work life, in our personal lives, and we should invest in becoming better communicators. And this book is one way to start doing that, and a very good recommendation from our group, I think.
I couldn't agree with you more. The best doctors are the ones that communicate. The best friendships are ones where you communicate. And Humble Inquiry, of course, is not a medical book. So what we learn here is applicable in all areas. So thank you again for joining us. And if you have any suggestions for future book clubs, please let us know. Thank you. Bye-bye.